This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, open year-round. Learn more at bbg.org.
Hello and welcome to Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network. I don't know. Not every Tuesday. What the hell, Stas? We got all this stuff going on.
So much
Stas,
stuff.
Stas, read it later. Read it later. There's no cash in the envelope.
Yep. Don't worry.
There's paper. There's an envelope from Heritage Radio Network on our chair. She shows up and immediately on air starts ripping the thing open and
like
shaking the envelope like
Buddy,
it's her birthday,
right?
And it's 12 years. She's 12 years old. It's her birthday.
You're not supposed to read the card, right? You're just
No. You don't want to rip the card in half because your parents want to look at the card.
Yeah.
But you somehow want to open the envelope and shake out the card. The card gets read if money shakes out.
Yes.
If there's no money shaking out of the envelope when you're a kid, right in the trash. Right?
Don't even read it yet.
Envelope? You mean cash vehicles? So we have to get off the air exactly at 1 today because there's another show coming on. So this is going to be an abbreviated show.
Yep.
Calling your questions to 718-497-2128, 718-497-2128. I don't even know if anyone's listening today because I didn't tweet out that we were back on and we missed last week.
We were supposed to do it.
For some reason, whenever Nastassi and I are with Harold McGee, we're like, we're going to finally get him live on the show. Live on the show. Something comes up.
I don't know why we didn't do it.
You know why we didn't do it? Because the engineer we had hired thought we were going to do it 2 days earlier and we couldn't do it. So listen.
No.
I don't know why. It's because we didn't have an engineer.
I forgot he left. It was all a blur. Everything last week.
All right, listen. At the end of the show, I want to talk a little bit about a friend of mine. So we're going to do this whole show in semi-reverse order. So let's do this. Let's not talk about our week or anything yet. That's going to be the middle of the show. Let's just answer some questions. Nastassi, every interval of time has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
You're going to go into questions. God. You're going to go into a tangent, and we're going to get off the air. How much money do you want to put on that, Matt?
This show is a well-oiled machine. Okay. It goes in a straight line.
It's definitely
point A to point B.
Well-oiled in the sense of greasy.
It's greasy. It's slippery. It's hard to get a hold of.
Exactly. Hello, Nastassi and Dave. I have a question. I can't remember if there is a show today. There is. I made about 10 pounds of bratwurst of various types, and I'm curious as to the best way to store them for reuse later, since I likely won't use them all before they go bad. You're just not eating enough. You can't take down 10 pounds of bratwurst? Don't you have friends? I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying you don't have friends. I likely won't use them all before they go bad. I did not use curing salt on any of them. I did use garlic in 2 of them in case that matters. For this, I don't think that matters. The 3 options I've considered are 1, freeze raw. 2, cook low temp at around 57 to pasteurize, then freeze. 3, cook low temp at 68, which seems to be a good temp for eating, then freeze. I have enough of each type that I could test this, but wondered if you had any initial thoughts / experience here. Enjoy the show and look forward to making it back to existing conditions next time I'm in NYC. Tyler. Now, I don't have any specific experience. However, I will tell you this. It is a well-known fact. It's a well-known fact that salted or cured meats, especially pork, when frozen, have the tendency to go rancid. And so, like, the higher the salt content, and I think also curing salts might actually accelerate that even more. So it's probably good, but I can't remember. You're tugging on my memory strings. But salted meats definitely go rancid faster in the freezer. So what happens is that when you freeze, you're never really freezing the product down to the temperature at which there's no free water in there, right? Your freezer's down at around minus 20 Celsius, which is about minus 4 Fahrenheit. And what happens is that as it starts freezing, you get very concentrated, salty areas, and those areas are much more prone to oxidative changes to the fats and for rancidity. So salted meats definitely are more apt to go rancid. Now, I would guess that, and I think there's some stuff that vacuum packing would somewhat prevent that because it would reduce the amount of oxygen present to cause those rancid flavors. I've also, there's some anecdotal evidence that a pre-cook is going to stabilize it somewhat, at least for color, on the rethaw and freezing down. I don't know whether or not it will on the rancidity part. I mean, because part of me thinks that, you know, cooking it, regular cooking, obviously, will start the lipid oxidation, and then therefore that will get vastly accelerated. That's like warmed over flavor kind of a situation. But a low temperature cook in a bath followed by freezing might be the way to go, but raw also. But really, I think importantly, get rid of the air, and, you know, don't freeze it for too long because it's going to, and also try to put it in the coldest part of your freezer because the freeze thaw up, down is going to also cause a lot of degradation over time. So that's what I would, that's what I say. That's my recommendation.
Good job.
You weren't even listening. You're looking at Zappos.
Dave, I'm listening.
What are you looking at? What? It's like so disconcerting. 1 hour or 40 minutes a day,
Dave,
you can't
listening.
Be off of your phone.
Storing
it's
hot
like,
dogs.
I, you know, what? What? You gotta...
Dave, get to the questions so we can get to other stuff. I need you to get through the questions.
Well, stop looking at your phone.
What does it matter to you?
Because we're doing a radio show.
She's prepping for
I'm
the
prepping.
No,
the
she
section.
Is not.
No, she definitely is. Yeah, I can tell. I'm looking at the web traffic. She's prepping. She's not on Zappos.
I don't even use Zappos.
Every day from 12 to 1.
She's like, why would I do that? I can now get most of those shoes Amazon Prime. And you know that I'm good at you know, returning them if they don't fit. So why would I use Zappos anymore?
Tangents.
We're big Amazon fans here on the show.
No,
Jeebus. Oh, I have a good shirt. Anyway, go.
You want to talk about
no,
your shirt?
No.
All right. I didn't even see this one. Okay, so we're going to have to do this one just, you know, on the fly.
On the cuff.
What's this question about, Nastassia? You don't know because you're looking at something else. You're looking at something else.
Do
you're not
know
paying
the
attention.
The carbonation one
no.
or the one from Elvin?
No. No. Okay. Pay attention. Hi, Dave and Nastassia. How do you expect people like who aren't even in the building with us to pay attention if you can't even pay attention during this one section of your life?
Dave, I put the questions together.
Kind of. You don't even remember where they are. All right. Hi, Dave and Nastassia. I recently got promoted to executive chef in an assisted living facility.
Oh, yeah. This was an important question to me because the word question wasn't in the email. So I re-forwarded to myself 2 weeks ago, and I put question in the subject line so that I would find it.
And that's why it's important to you.
Yes.
Because of the forwarding
procedure.
Because
otherwise it would have gone
not because of the contents,
unnoticed.
Not because of the contents
no,
of the question.
And I felt for this guy because he became, what is he, executive sous chef or something?
Executive chef, whoa, don't demote him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And like, you know, Matt's never read this shit. He's just lit
I
stuff.
I feel for
He's
you,
just
Kevin.
Listening.
I didn't want it to get lost in the ether. That's why I wrote question.
Wow.
Thank you for your commitment.
still on her phone, people. Still
Dave,
staring straight
I am
at her
listening.
Phone.
I am doing something so mindless.
Listen, I want everyone out there to know something. There is no such thing as multitasking. What you can do in your life is do a bunch of brainless things. You can do a bunch of idiot work, brainless stuff, like walking, chewing bubble gum, rubbing your stomach, right?
Isn't
like sitting there staring into the distance. You can do all of that. You can multitask that. Your brain is a single tasker. You can only really think about one thing. Everything else that you are multitasking on is subconscious or unconscious stuff, like breathing, walking, defecating, whatever you're doing. So don't ever look at me and tell me that you are multitasking when you're staring into your damn phone and that you're listening, because that is, as we say, physiologically not true. It is garbage. What do you think, Matt?
What percentage of the cooking issues listeners are defecating right now, do you think?
100%.
As they listen to the show. And is that upsetting to you to think about?
No.
No.
No, why not? Like it's it, it, listen. Half the time when you're on a conference call, I'm sure people
I'm
are
defecating.
Muting. Either Nastassia is whenever Nastassia's on a conference call with you, she's either in the bathroom on mute, if you're lucky, or she is like dropping a package off somewhere, or in the middle of like the loudest place in the center of New York City.
Calls, Dave.
They're the worst. You know what? And like everybody knows this, but like the more people are on a conference call, like the less anyone is listening. Mm-hmm. And so like everyone's on mute, everyone's zoned out, everyone's surfing the internet like Nastassia is right now and pretending to be quote unquote multitasking. So this is what will happen. Hey, so did you get that data? And then you hear this. Hey, and then like, it'll like their earphones, they'll suddenly hear that you're addressing them. and they haven't heard any of the rest of the conversation. So then you'll wait a while, and someone else will go, I think they're on mute. They're trying to get off mute. And they're fumbling around with their phone because they're doing other stuff. They get back off of mute, and they're like, what are we talking about? Like, honestly, that's every conference call I've ever been on. Have you ever been on a good conference call?
I cannot stand Amazon.
What the hell? That is not related.
She's not listening.
She's not listening.
It is our life.
She was multitasking.
Zero tasking. It's a new thing. Like, I want to call this new modern thing. It's called zero tasking. It's doing zero tasks well.
Also, whatever.
No, speak your truth.
The Amazon person, I'm writing scathing emails to them.
Okay.
And he's only addressing the other two people on the chain.
Is now the time to write scathing emails to Amazon? Did you not exist a half an hour ago?
No,
and will you not continue to exist a half an hour from
now? We need
our
money or we don't exist.
We need that money now, but this is...
This is the time that
is for the show. It's only for the show and not for Amazon.
All right, question.
Yes?
No, I mean, like, can we get back to the question? Yeah,
yeah. Okay. I recently got promoted to executive chef.
Good for you.
At an assisted living facility in the Central Coast of California, in charge of providing food for 60 residents and about 20 employees 3 times a day for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 7 days a week. That's a lot. Looking to upgrade kitchen to incorporate the use of sous vide circulator and Searsol, of course, was wondering what kind of sous vide vacuum sleeter you use and if there was a setup you would recommend for me to install. Love the show and can't wait to hear back. Kevin A. from Central California. Okay.
Well, Kevin, I used to cook for kids in Switzerland. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner for about 100 kids, and I didn't use any sous vide cooking, so you don't really need it. Next question.
What a jerk. He's a guy.
It might be the right answer, though.
But it's absolutely not. First of all, like, I know Nastasia. I know what she does to other people. The last time I put Nastasia in charge of cooking something, it was raw on the floor, and then the rest of the stuff she handed off to someone who incinerated all the meat. Assisted living has specific problems in that the people who are there are immunocompromised. Okay?
So which it's makes like, me think that Nastasia should not be cooking for children or immunocompromised.
Definitely not.
All those children
definitely
survived,
not, because Nastasia would be like, you know what? It was their time to go.
No. There was a grease fire that broke out.
Yeah, okay. So let's talk about what to do. He's like, Nastasia was like, I had no idea. Nastasia was like, I was 20 at the time and had really no idea what was going on. But I cooked for the kids
pasta,
anyway and they didn't die.
I made ratatouille.
So
I made,
what?
I don't know.
First of all, ratatouille.
For 100 people.
Ratatouille for 100. Okay, so the pot was slightly larger than if you made it for 10 people.
Chicken.
Okay, how did you cook the chicken?
I strung them all up.
What do you mean
strung
them
all? Chickens. I strung up like 50 chickens over a spit. And
where was the spit?
Them. Then we had like a big outdoor spit.
So you cooked once.
No.
You were not. I've seen you try to hook up a rotisserie before. You were not cooking rotisserie chickens every day for 100 kids.
Not every day.
Once. You did it once.
No, I did it 3 times.
In your life.
For the kids.
She's like, every meal, rotisserie chicken.
See, why should I answer questions when you only denigrate anything I say?
I'm not denigrating you. First of all, you just said,
fine, you know, my experience in Switzerland was crap.
Really?
You're right.
Really?
I did a bad job. I should not have been cooking for children. Go ahead, Dave. Answer his question.
No, you know what? Nastasia.
No, you're right. You're totally right. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. You put me in my place.
You should see her face,
people.
What place?
I should not have been cooking.
Oh, I put you in your place?
Yep. Go ahead.
Listen,
Nastasia and I's place.
There's no correct answer, ever. Nastasia and I are in the exact same place, garbage can, 100% of the time. Anyway.
It's great that you're together, though.
Oh, no, please. Couldn't we just be stored in separate garbage cans? Just separate garbage cans?
Not your fate.
I'm finding the photo.
Okay, great. I'm sure, Nastasia, that it was the chicken delicious?
No.
Oh.
It was bad.
It's bad. All of
Matt
it.
Believes you. So that's the thing. Like, Nastasia, like, the fact of the matter is, I can't. Okay. I would get, if you're cooking for 60 residents, okay? 60 residents and 20 employees, that's 80 people. So you don't want to get a super small vacuum machine. I would get like the kind of medium-sized one. I don't have the number off the top of my head. I don't have a deal with them, but I typically use MiniPak just because they're much easier for me to deal with than Multivac, and they have a real presence here as opposed to a lot of the European companies, other than Multivac and MiniPak, which are both European companies. But I would get a real one with a vacuum pump. They cost a little more, but you're going to be a lot happier. The thing about getting not the smallest one, but the next size up, is that you can get it with two seal bars. And the important thing about getting it with two seal bars is that the main problem with vacuum packaging is actually waiting for the machine to run through a cycle. So if you have two seal bars, right, if you need the full size because you're going to do something large, you can remove one of the seal bars and you get the entire chamber width. But if you need to package a lot of stuff, it's literally twice the speed. So if your vacuum cycle is running like 45 seconds, then you can have the amount of time. And if Nastasia, you remember when we were bagging all those cookies?
Mm-hmm.
How long did that take us?
A very long time.
Right. And we had two seal bars. Nastasia,
very long time.
Just don't use it. That's the easiest way to do it. You know what the easiest way to do? Become a raw vegan. Actually, it's not. A lot of dehydrators for that. And then it says vacuum sealer. In terms of the circulators, I mean, all the circulators work, to be honest. What you should look for is, really, they all work. I like the ones, if you're going to work professionally, I prefer ones that are a little bit more robo. I wouldn't go for the cheapest one possible. I haven't had a lot of experience with the Juul when you're using multiple units off of one phone, so I don't really know how that works if you're going to be using multiple units, but I would definitely consider getting a couple of circulators. And obviously try to trick out your baths to work properly. So the biggest problem I see with people with circulators is using the wrong kind of a circulating bath. Like they're putting stuff in metal, or they're not making sure that the product is off of the bottom of the thing, or not touching the sides, or is fully submerged, or they're not putting enough separation in between the layers of product so that they're getting kind of incorrect cooking. So that's what I would say. Or as Nastasia would say, just don't use it. Just don't use the technique. Do something else. Cook rotisserie chickens. So do you have the picture of rotisserie chicken?
No, I can't find it.
Hmm. Okay.
Well, I want this picture for the episode art.
Oh, I'll find it then.
Yeah. This is Elvin. So we had Kevin before, we have Elvin now. I'm curious if you have thoughts about unshaking a drink using clarification. Unshaking in quotes. So Nick Bennett, who was with us at the party, which hopefully we have time to talk about. What?
Mm-hmm.
I was curious if you had any thoughts about unshaking a drink using clarification. So Nick Bennett used to take shaken specks and turn them into stirred cocktails, and he would call them unshaking them. I recently played around with milk washing stuff like daiquiris and sidecars, but if you're milk washing it, you're going to... Oh, I see, like milk washing, but you would still shake it to get the foam. I don't quite understand. But it seems like a standardish spec doesn't map perfectly into an old-fashioned template drink. I'm wondering if there's a standard three-ingredient sour would usually work by itself in general. I'll get around to playing with centrifuge citrus juices very soon. Thanks, Elvin. So whenever you're converting a shaken drink to a stirred drink, you're going to radically decrease the sour component and also decrease the sweet. You're going to have less overall sweet. And I would start in the range of two of the spirit and half of simple, less even, half or less of simple and a quarter or less of acid, and start balancing, because the reason is it's a warmer drink. So you're going to decrease the sugar. The acid's going to pop harder in a stirred drink. People aren't used to having that much acid. And also the alcohol content's going to be high. The dilution's going to be lower than in a shaken drink. So it's going to require more sugar than it would acid, but less of both sugar and acid than you would have in a shaken drink. Does that make sense? So the way the drink is made when you're shaking it, the entire amount of acid and sugar is going to be far lower than in a shaken drink of the same spec. And also, the acid is going to be shifted down relative to the sugar, just because because of the way the dilution works. And at least that's been my experience. And then P.S., I've heard rumors that the Japanese translation of Liquid Intelligence is heavily redacted due to its perceived incompatibility with traditional Japanese bartending. Can you confirm or deny these allegations? I've never heard this before. Have you heard this, Nastasia?
Nope. I have not.
She's definitely now. This one's my fault. This one's on me.
Heavily redacted.
This one's on me. This
Dave,
one's on me.
Dave.
This one's on me. The fact that Nastasia is looking through... Look, didn't I... Even if you don't believe me, Even if you don't believe me, you can't do me the common courtisy. This one's on me, though.
This one's on you.
This one's on me.
So I heard that your Japanese book was heavily redacted. Is this true?
No. No? Maybe redacted. I don't know. I need to find someone who speaks Japanese who will look. I have to say that the liquid intelligence in Japanese is the most beautiful of all the liquid intelligences. The way it's put together, the way it's boxed, it looks amazing.
It's crazy that they
do. You have a copy?
Ask you.
I have several copies.
Your permission to
they don't
it.
Ask me.
Yeah. Squat. But when I think about the process with you and Maria,
when you think about what a rancid bastard I am during anything,
right? And then they just do this, and you're like,
and they just do it.
Okay,
they just do it.
Okay,
bring a copy to the studio. I'll give it to Akiko. We can ask.
Yeah, I mean, I have them at the bar. They're really, I mean, they look great. You know what? Also, people, the honest truth is they might have asked me stuff in my email, and would I have seen it? No, I would not have seen it.
I didn't see anything.
He only answers questions from you, listeners.
Well.
If the publisher had asked me on Twitter,
yeah,
I would have seen it.
That's true.
All right, so now we're going to do Classics in the Field?
No, we're going to talk about L.A. and MoFad.
Then Classics in the Field?
Sure.
All right. So
I found the photo.
Oh, that's it. And while we're doing that, I'll be looking at the photo, and you will be talking about the party we just did in Los Angeles. All right. I see a team of people cooking.
No, I did it all. They just wanted to take a photo with me.
Uh-huh. All right, people. What I'm looking at is a bunch of chickens. When you said string it up, they are literally on a piece of string.
Yes.
Not on a spit. On a string.
Yep.
So how did you turn them?
Manually.
What do you mean? No, she's making a crank motion, but there is no crank. It is a piece of string. So how did you fist them?
We fist them.
You fisted them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how often were you turning them?
I don't know, every 20 minutes.
Every 20 minutes? Well, they look like they would taste good.
They tasted good.
They look like they would taste good. Now, let me see. How many kids?
100.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 chickens.
No, that's not true.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8
no.
chickens.
No.
Okay, I'm looking at the picture. I can see the chickens. There are 8 chickens.
Oh, there's another string behind it that you can't see.
Dave, just trust her. An entire generation of Swedish kids owe their existence to the
Swiss.
That's what I said.
But
they were
international kids.
My bad.
Anyway, but the point is that she's doing some loaves and fishes action. She's like,
I love loaves and fishes.
You'll get one piece of chicken. They're like, a breast? No. A piece, not like a full piece. You get like just one piece.
A delicious morsel.
A morsel. Morsel.
All right.
You gotta send me that picture.
I know. Well, I can't send anything to you here, so I'm gonna.
Because there's no internet. Yeah. Hey, listen. I'll go on record. The chickens look fine.
Thank you. They were great. I was a happier, better cook back then.
That's the nicest thing you could come up with.
Chickens look fine. Why would you have been a better cook back then?
Because I didn't care as much.
Then you're not a better cook.
No, I didn't care about what people thought. You know.
What? And how does that make you a better cook?
Because I wasn't. I don't know, because I was just like, I'm going to just throw it all together and see what happens. And now I work with people that don't let you do that.
What do you mean? No one stops you from the way you cook at home. Who stops you from doing anything?
People have expectations of me now that I work in food.
Yeah, but how does that make you... In other words, what you're saying is you're less happy cooking.
Yeah.
Not that you're a better cook back then. You were more happier.
I may have been a better cook back then because I cooked more often.
Yeah, but isn't that just because you're busier now?
Yeah.
You have more crap to do, like Amazon and whatnot.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So put the phone down, and let's talk about the party.
Okay.
Put the phone down. The phone is for closers.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn featuring spectacular plant displays year-round. Mark your calendars for Saturday, September 28th, when the Chili Pepper Festival returns to Brooklyn Botanic Garden. At this all-day celebration of all things hot and spicy, indulge in sizzling bites from 40 food artisans. Enjoy spicy food demonstrations, foodie-friendly tours and talks, activities for kids, and live performances by musicians and artists around the garden. Stay through the evening for a special concert that brings New Orleans to Brooklyn. Festival goers can jam out to the legendary New Orleans musicians John Papa Gross, Walter Wolfman Washington, and New Orleans Queen of Soul, Irma Thomas. Joining the fun will be Big Chief Monk Boudreaux, bringing the traditions of the Mardi Gras Indians to the heart of Brooklyn. Learn more about Brooklyn Botanic Garden at bbg.org.
All right, so what do we do?
We did a lot. We did a party, a big party.
Where?
At the Houdini Mansion.
Who?
And it was for MOFAD.
Right.
And a lot of people came. And everyone thought that Harold wasn't going to dress up.
Harold McGee. His Harold McGee, famous writer of On Food and Cooking, like, you know, the godfather of science as it relates to the making of delicious
and
foods.
And Dave was like, we're not putting him in that $50 Amazon Zoltar costume. And I left it on the table knowing he's not going to put it on. And then when we looked in the bedroom and...
First of all, people... Like, Harold McGee not only dressed in Nastasia's, like...
Pantyhose.
Yeah, the whole outfit was made from pantyhose and, like, I don't know, things that were recovered from, like, a used car dealership. But, like, not only did Harold McGee put on the Zoltar outfit and the cardboard Zoltar... He's a fortune-telling character. You might recently have seen him on, I think, some sort of...
Big.
It's either Progressive or...
Geico, I think.
Geico or something commercial. Anyways, so he not only put on the outfit and like the clothes and the box, but Harold McGee, for those of you who don't know, Google a picture of him. Harold McGee has a beard already. He has like I don't
we
know if
we discovered
it's,
this last night.
It's
right?
not his beard's not like a technically a goatee. It's not pointy, right? But it's kind of goatee-ish, right? Right? And a mustache, right? Right. Costume comes with a Zoltar goatee.
And beard.
Yeah, the goatee
mustache.
Yeah.
And eyebrows.
And eyebrows.
McGee has eyebrows.
And the beard and the mustache. But he glued the Zoltar.
No, he used my boob tape to.
What?
Yeah.
What's boob tape?
The things that keep your, like, your dresses so that your boobs don't pop out.
Okay. So, like, they make special anti-side boob tape?
Yeah.
Okay. So, learn something new every day. So, like, he glues or boob tapes this Zoltar facial hair over his real facial hair. His only complaint was that there was, like, a little plastic strip that said Zoltar at the top of the costume. And since he was tall, like it was right at his sight level and he couldn't see through the thing, he's like, can you cut off the piece of plastic that says Zoltar? So, we cut off the plastic. And he wore that dang thing all night long.
He ate in it. Somebody thought we hired him as like a Hollywood off the street type guy.
No, they called him a human prop, and we're like, oh no,
he's a godfather of food science. That's
Harold McGee. And at that party, also we met David Karp, who's like the preeminent fruit explorer, works at UC Riverside. And we could talk more about that in
we're
going to
make new apple heads.
We went. So who was cooking at the party? Your friend? You want to talk about your friends?
Jeremiah and Fabulous.
You want to give a shout out to your friends?
My friend Nina from Ziza Catering.
Yeah. And
her food was really beautiful.
Fabulous and Jeremiah, which is, you know, from Contro Wild Air. They came and did the cooking. So the funniest part to me was they had from Tacos 1984 or 86, 84, 84.
Thank you.
So, like, you know, well-known taco joint in L.A. that I think is opening a place here in New York. So they had a, you know, one of those portable Al Pastor units. You know, guys know what I'm talking about. It's like kind of like a gyro or hero or shawarma burner, but like
if you check out my Instagram saved stories.
All right. So what it is? So it's like this like very high heat. Almost, it looks like a flower pot planter in the back, cranks, and then it's a vertical rotisserie spit. And so you layer the meat up on the spit, and then it rotates and cooks, and you slice off as it cooks, and you make sandwiches or tacos or whatever you're gonna make with it, right? So they get this vertical al pastor machine, and so they're cooking with it for a long time. And so at a certain point, and Fabulous, by the way, had shattered one of his arms. Like, one of his arms is in like some sort of RoboCop, like some sort of bionic thing, because he was riding a scooter in D.C. and smashed into a wall and, like, broke his arm into a million pieces. So we were calling Fabulous the one-armed bandit the entire time he was there. So he's sitting there with one hand tending this spit, And Jeremiah comes up like right before the party, like right before the party started, right? And was like, I think I want to increase the heat a little bit. So the way that these spits work is there's a little square plate with a hole in it, and that just slides along on this air, on this like kind of like a flat area that you can scrape off. And in front of that is a, like a sizzle, like a gas fired like griddle sizzle plate. And then over the top is like is a big fat bar with holes drilled in it. And before you cook, let me reiterate this. Before you cook, you set the distance to the fire by lifting the bar and figuring which one of the holes you're going to put it in. It's like a belt loop, right, Nastasia? It's mm-hmm. like it works like a belt. So anyway, so like 5 minutes before the party starts, Jeremiah's like, yo, I'm going to move this thing closer to the fire. So he lifts the bar, and immediately, I think he doesn't realize that the bottom piece that is not firmly attached, immediately the thing goes shoop, and the meat starts like flying out of the thing. He catches the hot meat, right? And then he's like, help, help, help. And so what happens is Fabulous runs over, and he's like, I need someone with two hands. And so like I run over, and they had put like 18 million pounds of like spice mix on the outside of this meat, and the fat had started oozing out, so it became like spice fat. And I'm like, I know I'm wearing all black, but still, I'm not going to get this all like all over me, right? So I have to strip down to my T-shirt. And for those of you that know me, like, I am wearing like 85 layers of clothing, even though it's a billion degrees, right, Stas?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I like stripping down, and then we're trying to muscle this meat back in, right? And of course, what is Nastasia doing? Filming for posterity instead of helping. Fair. There was enough people around the machine. Yes. Didn't need to be any more people around the machine. I'm not knocking you here, Stas, right? So then... So we finally get it back in, and we're like, oh my God. And then Nastasia shows me the video, and it's a video you have to go onto her stories. You have to make it more permanent.
It's a permanent story.
All right. So you look at it, you wait for it, and then at a certain point, Nastasia, I don't know how she knew this was happening. She pans back, and there's McGee in the Zoltar outfit just watching, having a calm drink. And it basically sums up the entire McGillicuddy right there.
Well, okay, and shout out to Dan the Automator.
Dan the Automator. Shout out to who spun during the thing, which
was
awesome.
Shout out to Barry, who is Mark Ronson's guy.
Engineer, who showed up. And we thought we would have to do our own playlist before and after. He's like, well, we can just use...
I don't think you can say that.
I didn't say anything. Okay, I take it back. He didn't say anything. So then a big shout out to Pernod Ricard.
Yeah.
And a big shout out to the LA Times.
Yeah.
So Pernod Ricard was the prime payer for the party. And we went out there, and then we did a video shoot with the LA Times at the farmer's market. So the Santa Monica farmer's market is amazing. The Wednesday Santa Monica farmer's market is amazing. And actually we saw some cooking issues people out there. So I was really psyched about that. But the fruit was nuts. So we bought Kino, which is out of season now. But what's the name of the farm we used? Do you remember?
Yeah.
So there's this one farm in SoCal that like has a very weird microclimate, so they can do weird things. They do weird things to citrus. So they had Kino, which is this awesome, I can't remember whether it's a tangerine or mandarin or what.
I think it was a tangerine.
But they had this awesome fruit that way past when anyone else would have it. So Nastasia.
Mud Creek Ranch.
Mud Creek Ranch. So Nastasia mm-hmm. and I, and they also are the ones that had the mandarin quats the last time we were there, that they were just finished. Those mandarin quats were some of the best citrus I've ever had. So we were like, the idea of this party was sustainability, right? So we were going to make a cordial, because a cordial takes a fresh fruit and makes it last forever, uses a lot of the peel, et cetera, et cetera. So these Kinos actually have delicious peels. So we were able to use the twist, the peel in the cordial, and the clarified juice, and last forever. But here's the interesting part. So many mandarins, by the way, David Karp, who we met also, came to the party, but we met him at the farmer's market, says that anyone who doesn't live where they grow mandarins has no idea what a mandarin is supposed to taste like, because mandarins are waxed, and every waxed mandarin starts going into anaerobic respiration and creates kind of off and fermenty flavors. So what 99% of us think is normal flavor in, let's say, a clementine or whatever we're buying, whatever mandarins we're buying at the supermarket, he's like, that's like the difference between like making a guacamole fresh with a delicious fresh avocado and buying those packaged, because you don't like packaged guacamole, right? You at least have that standard. Mm-hmm. So like... So anyway, so he says none of us really know what a good mandarin tastes like. And he says that mandarins are the most noble of citrus. But the problem with them is that if you are converting them into juice, you need to drink the juice right away, because almost all of them, to a greater or lesser degree, exhibit what's called delayed bitterness. So there's a reaction, which is, I believe, partially enzymatically what's the word, catalyzed, that will take a delicious juice and make it go bitter over time, therefore unusable as a drink or a cocktail. There are some studies currently out on using wine-finding agents to knock the bitterness out, and apparently agar and gelatin can do it. But my hope was that by turning this delicious thing into a cordial, the heat from cordializing, as well as the clarification, would cause it to not go bitter, and ding, ding, it does. So if you have some fancy citrus and you want to use it in a cocktail, consider making a cordial. It will not go bitter if you clarify and do just like the quick heat cordial. It's possible that just clarifying it will be enough, but we didn't run that test because we wanted it to taste like a cordial. And so that's what we did. We also picked up $80 worth of Jimmy Nardello peppers for Fabulous and Jeremiah to cook with, and they didn't end up cooking with them. Now, these peppers are in the arc of taste. These peppers are incredibly delicious. Nastasia hasn't had it yet, right? No. They're what's called a frying pepper. They're like an Italian frying pepper, right? So they don't have a lot of seeds. They have a lot more seeds than a normal full-eating pepper, like a shishito or a padrone, which they also had a whole... We had bought a whole bunch of those when we were out there as well. So I bring these two giant bags of Nardellos back home with me on the airplane because I wasn't going to let them go to waste. By the way, for those of you that have never worked at a big event, what ends up happening is no matter how good the products are, at the end of the night, you're so tired and you're so spent and you need to get out of the place and everyone's trying to leave, so that no matter how good the product is, what happens to it, Nastasia?
Gets dumped.
Right? But
there's nothing that takes care of a hangover like pushing a dumpster, right, Dave?
Oh, my God. So Nastasia's like, we stayed
up until 3 or 4.
We spent a lot of money to throw the party, but still we were doing it on a heavy budget. So Nastasia's like, Dave, you need to get up.
At 6:30. So we go to bed at 4. We get up at 6:30. I'm like, Dave, get ready.
Yeah, so then we drive over there and pushed a dumpster.
A 3-yard dumpster.
It was sucked. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, our car didn't break down this time, though.
Nastasia gave Nastasia a lot of... So last time we were in L.A., we rented a Peace Bus. Well, not really. It was like a Vanagon, right? It died. We talked about this on the air. It died dead. No alternator. Dead. So we finally get it back to the house after we jumped it 3 times from Austin Henley's, who helped us this time at the party, his like miniature new Fiat. And then... they came and take it, and they gave us a credit for $120 for the Peace Bus. And so with this credit, Nastasia rents for 2 days.
No, 3 days.
Oh, a Chrysler.
LeBaron. From 85.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. For those of you that think that the Chrysler LeBaron. And then she buys me this, beat fake top hat. And because I forgot my real hat, I have to go. I burn and I don't use lotion, right?
So we're riding around like douches. You're wearing a top hat.
We made everyone look good. People would roll up on us, which was really easy because, to the floor, this Chrysler did about 5 miles an hour. Like, this is not your, B-52's got me a Chrysler. It seats about 20. It was got me a Chrysler. It's as small as an otter, right? Not as big as a whale. And it did feel like it was sailing at the speed it was going. And it was, tiny. Anyways, people would roll up on us and be like, nice. And then, poof, go past. Am I right, Stas?
Yes.
All right. So listen, they're going to kick us off the air. Next week, we'll do... the classic in the field for today was going to be Drina Dodson's Applehead Dolls. I have the book with me. But, and I will try to convince Nastasia... For next week, we also talk more about the party because there's more to talk about. I'm gonna talk about apples, right?
I'll bring the doll book too.
I'm gonna try to convince Nastasia to allow me to post on Instagram the entire Applehead dolls for pleasure and profit. I'm also Applehead dolls as they are made now are not edible because they're heavily salted. But Nastasia and I are going to come up with a procedure that we'll call it the Nastasia method, whereby we can make Applehead dolls that are, in fact, edible.
Okay.
All right? So that's my goal. Maybe we'll have it by next week. Nastasia and I are going to have the Nastasia method of Appleheads, and then I'm going to very artfully place Nastasia's head into Drina Dodson's head position on this book, and then possibly...
No, I don't want that.
Why not?
Because you're cursing
it to me.
To be her...
You can't be her. You don't live in Anaheim. Anyways.
Oh, or Pasadena. Best bar in the world. Star Wars bar at Disneyland.
Oh, yeah, Go. She didn't take me.
you would not. You would never have gone with us.
Of course I would have gone with you.
No, you wouldn't. You would never have gone with
us. Why would I not have gone?
If I said, hey, Dave, come to L.A. a day early. We're all going to Disneyland.
I would not have done that.
Yeah.
But if we had a day in the middle and you said, let's go to Disneyland.
You wouldn't have done it.
What?
You'd say, isn't there some work we could be doing?
Listen,
with my family.
I know because I've gotten feedback that people think I'm an overly angry individual on this radio program towards Nastasia. I'll just have you know that she spends her whole life pushing my buttons so that she can get me to flare up because that's what she enjoys doing. But I am not a monster. I don't think. All right, now.
That's it.
No, I have to talk about Aang-Soo.
Oh.
So on the way home, I'll say this. So years ago when I first started getting into, a couple years after I've been working with Wiley Dufresne, I started working for, not for money, but working with him. I started working at the French Culinary Institute as their director of culinary technology. And one of the best parts of the job, or the best part of the job really, was the intern program. So students would come in and they would, after class, they would, work with me. And originally one of our original interns, her Mindy Lavoff, who, we're still obviously good friends with, she became the original leader of the interns. And then eventually Nastasia came in and became the, other leader of the interns. So that's how Nastasia and I started working together. And every once in a while, we would just have an amazing group of students because they would be there for their 9 months, I guess it was, right? 6-9 months, whatever the program was. They would be there and then they would move on. And so we had this amazing group, and in that group were people like Peter Schweigert, who last time I checked was the GM and spirits person at Marvel Bar, worked at Alinea for a long time, had a lot of rotovap knowledge. Nick Wong, who's like, one of the best of the best, who's now the chef at UB Preserve in Houston. Angela Gabatz, who's at Goldenrod Pastries and doing like amazing stuff at Goldenrod Pastries. Fantastic people. But then also was Aang-Soo. And Aang-Soo was an amazing guy. He was from Singapore. And I actually probably learned as much from him when he was an intern as he learned from me. So I remember a couple of weeks ago, I talked about Batnut Chestnuts. He was the one who introduced me to those. He also was one of the rare people who could, go toe to toe with me with saying kind of absurd, ridiculous things. So if you've ever hung out with me in the real life, like I will have a tendency to just say completely off the wall things. And Aang-Soo was one of those people who could totally keep up toe to toe with me on that. He was very interested in all of the different cultural inputs that went into making Singapore what it was. It was kind of funny because he was already an amazing cook. He came to the FCI to do pastry, in fact. And then, after he left, he did some work in Israel and for a couple of years. And then several years ago, opened up his own restaurant in Singapore called Coconut Club, where he... he was doing nasi lemak, which is the coconut rice with all of the Malay dish, coconut rice all around. And he did a lot of, made a big kerfuffle because he was charging, he was basically a street food, and he was charging, some like exorbitant amount, like 6 or 8 or 10 times what it would normally cost on the street to serve it at his restaurant. And he was doing it, and he was like, no, crap on you. I want to pay respect to this dish. And so he was having, he was sourcing special coconuts from one specific place, having his own coconut milk made, was trying to build a factory to do that. He was paying his workers a lot more than anyone else was paying them because, at his core, he was not just a great cook, not just extremely funny. And I really, for all of you who never been in a kitchen with him, you're missing out. Like there are people that you meet in your life who make the kitchen just a much more fun place to be, who can handle pressure, who can handle being a perfectionist, who can handle, tense situations, but just make the kitchen, even when that's going on, just an incredibly fun place to be. Aang-Soo is one of those people, and he, we lost him last week. He was only 40 years old. Cookie issues.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.